Welcome to the podcast of the First Presbyterian Church of Englewood, a community committed to live boldly, share boundlessly, grow community, and build God's world. Please visit us in person or at englewoodpres.org.
Well, our second lesson today is taken from the Gospel according to Matthew, chapter 5, verses 13 through 20. You are the salt of the earth, but if salt has lost its taste, how can its saltiness be restored? It is no longer good for anything, but is thrown out and trampled underfoot. You are the light of the world. A city built on a hill cannot be hid. No one, after lighting a lamp, puts it under a bushel basket, but on the lampstand, and it gives light to all in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others, so that they may see your good works and give glory to your Father in heaven. Do not think that I have come to abolish the law or the prophets. I have come not to abolish, but to fulfill. For truly I tell you, until heaven and earth have passed away, not one letter, not one stroke of a letter will pass from the law until all is accomplished. Therefore, whoever breaks one of the least of these commandments and teaches others to do the same will be called least in the kingdom of heaven. But whoever does them and teaches them will be called great in the kingdom of heaven. For I tell you, unless your righteousness exceeds that of the scribes and Pharisees, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven. Friends, this is the word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God.
Well, those of you who know me for a while know that I do enjoy cooking. I enjoy it second only to eating. And I do have this thing, when you go out and make a recipe, I mean, I like simple recipes, but one of the things, I don't know if it happens to you, you forget what spices you have at home. It happens to me all the time. So it's gotten to the point where I now make a list, and I carry it on my phone, so I have a little Evernote note with a list of all the spices that I have on my spice rack and carry it with me, so if I decide to make something, I know whether I have it. But one of the issues that comes from that is occasionally you do need to go through your spice rack and throw out some that you haven't used in quite some time because they no longer have any flavor at all. So occasionally I go through, did this a few months ago, found a couple bottles of something or another that said Best Buy 2009. And thought, well, okay, probably time to get rid of that. But the thing that you never have to get rid of is salt. I mean, it may start to clump, but you know, you have that, some of you, depending on how much you use, you may have that thing of Morton's or whatever that's sitting on your shelf, and it has been there for quite some time. You know, that by the time you need to use it, you have to dust off the top of the jar, but you pour it out, if it still pours, and it works, all right? It does not seem to go bad. So we read this passage, and Jesus talks about what happens to salt that has lost its taste. And we're not really used to dealing with that problem, because the salt that we're using is completely pure. All right? So we're, you know, we get a thing of salt. It is 100% salt. Back in the day, and still in certain parts of the world, they use salt that comes from mines. I mean, you've heard about the salt mines. And mined salt would have impurities of crystals that were white. There were mineral crystals, but they weren't actually salt. They also weren't water-soluble the way salt is. So you could have a container of this impure salt around, and then moisture could cause the salt to leach away. And eventually, after it's old enough, what you have in your container is a container of these leftover, flavorless, white crystals that look like salt. You can't tell that it's not salt until you actually taste it and you realize it has no flavor. So what he's talking about in this metaphor is a jar of crystalline leftover that looks like salt, but actually has no function. It has no purpose. And all you can do is throw it out. It doesn't do anything anymore. So that's to take us into this ancient context of why he's using this particular metaphor of something we don't have to relate to. But we do relate to the idea of not having the substance that we were meant to have. And that's a problem that we face in our lives, is sometimes we continue to have the appearance of being something without really being what we were supposed to be. And what we were supposed to be is people whose faith is evident to the world in substantial ways. And so he moves on from the salt metaphor to talk about us being the light of the world. And we know this about light, all right? Light is supposed to shine. He went on and, you know, gave that metaphor about you don't take a light and you put it under a bushel basket. You don't do that. Light is extremely difficult to get rid of other than by covering it up, all right? You know, you can't shine dark into a room. Once you have light going, it just goes. I mean, I recently had this problem. I got a new cable box at home, and it has the brightest LED in front of it, you know, that gives the time. I actually had to put tape over it in order to sleep at night, because it casts this blue light into the room that when the lights are out, I can actually walk across the room just on the light from what my cable box was throwing off. All right. So now I can't tell what time it is because I have to keep it locked in order to be able to sleep. But that's how strong light is, that even a relatively small light source takes over a room, dominates a room. And we're supposed to be like that. We're supposed to be the light of the world. We're supposed to understand that the light that we cast out into the world is very difficult to stop unless you block it. The only way you can counteract it is to cover it up. And once you cover it up, it doesn't really matter what's under there. You throw a bushel basket over a lamp, doesn't matter what's under there. Again, this contrast between what the appearances are and what the underlying reality is. And the way we throw our light into the world, and Jesus takes us through this very linearly, the way we take our light into the world is with our works. Now, you probably read this, and I think a lot of us do, we read this and we immediately go into a little bit of dissonance because we're continually told in the faith, but don't forget, you're not saved by your works. Don't forget, you're not saved by your works. Don't forget, you're not saved by your works. Yeah, we remember that. But that's not what this is saying. We understand that our relationship with God is predicated on faith. Our relationship with God is predicated on God's grace having been shown to us. All right? But God's not talking about that here. Jesus is talking about how we take this and show it to the world. And what the world sees is what we do. Because we know in every sphere of life, we talk about people who are all talk and no action. And even though we are people who are saved by our faith through grace, okay, we're saved by God's grace to us and our response in faith, the way the world sees that is true is by what we do. That when we go out into the world and we feed the hungry, when we go out into the world and we do things like habitat projects and stuff like that, or you know, the kids are hauling, you know, tons of soup over to the Center for Food Action, when they're doing things like that in the name of Christ, people see faith in action and they understand the power of God. And so this is what we're being called to do here. We're being called to go out into the world and do these things, but we're also being called to do these things in increasingly higher levels. See, the biggest problem that we have, I think, right now in a lot of ways is complacency. When we sit there, we ask you, how many cans of soup are you asked for, right? The publicity went out in the email, said, everybody bring 5 cans of soup. All right, everybody asked for 5 cans of soup. Anybody bring more than 5? Yeah, okay. All right, see, you had people out there said, bring 5 cans. Well, you know what? I'll bring more. I've talked to somebody in the church who has said that the way he thinks about doing this is he says, well, you know, you generally when I'm asked to do something like this, I think about the person who might not do it And I try to give extra because I can, so that I'm covering someone else too. So I remember a person telling me that when they hear an appeal like this and they say, we ask for, gee, everybody bring 5 cans of soup for the Super Bowl of Caring. His response personally is to say, well, since I'm able, I'm going to bring 10. Because I'm going to bring 5 for the person, I'm going to bring 5 for me because that's what I've been asked to do. And then I'm going to bring 5 for a person who didn't do it, who didn't read their email, who didn't check the newsletter, who didn't, I'm going to cover for them. They try to do more. And doing more is something that Jesus is telling us is what puts us over the top and what makes us more visible in our faith to the world. Right? It says, for I tell you, unless your righteousness exceeds that of the scribes and Pharisees, you know, unless you do more. We're not going to pay too much attention to that last part there. You will never enter the kingdom of heaven, because we're sort of steering away from the threat piece of this. And holding ourselves to the standard of this. The idea that you should be doing more. We always talk about more. We like more. We like this, right? You're going to hear about how many times tonight when you watch the Super Bowl are you going to hear them talk about a player giving 110%? You talk about, boy, yeah, he gave 110%. You can't give 110%. We know that. And yet that is still a standard that we hold ourselves to. We sit there and say, you know what? We don't just want you to do. We want you to do more. We want you to go over and above. We want you to not just live for the standard, but go beyond the standard. And for Christians, this is something Jesus is trying to hold up in front of us all the way through the decisions that we make in life. I mean, we have to face this question. Are you striving for more, or are you just settling for the status quo? You know, when you think about what it means to do good, when you think about what it means to be righteous, when you think about what it means to help the poor, are you striving for more? You sit there and go through your life and say, how can I do more? How can we do more? How can we be better? Or do you sit there and say, we've done pretty well. Done good enough. We should be happy with that. It infects our society in so many different ways. You know, sure, absolutely. Nobody wants us to go back to slavery. I hope. But really, was ending slavery enough? No. No one wants to go back to having white and colored drinking fountains. Is that enough? Getting rid of those? No. See, at every point along the way, in terms of fighting for justice, in terms of trying to make the world what God would have it be, we have to keep pushing forward. I mean, that word righteousness, when he talks about exceeding righteousness, that word righteousness in the Greek isn't a personal word, or at least it's not just a personal word. It's not just a word that talks about your righteousness in terms of, well, gee, how much do I pray, or how much do I give, or how much do I do. Embedded in that word righteousness is the idea of making wrongs right. That's what righteousness is, all right? In the definition of the word, the idea of the word, it's trying to be a person who goes out and makes wrongs right. So how many of them? Well, Jesus would tell us, all of them. Can you do all of them today? No. You can do all of them tomorrow? No. Are we going to do all of them before Jesus returns? No. But is that your excuse to do none of them? No. We continually sit there and try to make wrongs right. One at a time, as we encounter them, as our gift mix fits the particular wrong that we encounter, we try and take them and make them right. And we can't be people who sit there and say, well, we've made enough of them right that we can stop. That's not the way faith works. Our Christian duty is to continually be people who aim for righteousness that exceeds where it is today. There was a great quote from Karl Barth in one of his writings years ago, the theologian Karl Barth, where he said, "It is also the job of the Christian every single day to understand God's love as being greater than you had understood it to be before." Every single day, you understand God's love is greater than it was before. Every single day, you strive for righteousness that exceeds what the righteousness was before. The great problem that you had with the Pharisees was not so much that they strove for a level of righteousness, but that they strove for a level of righteousness and also said that was enough. You must do this, and you need not do more. As we go out into the world, we have to continually look for the more. The more is what inspires people. It's what inspires people in every walk of life. It's what, like I said, you know, referencing the Super Bowl, it's what will inspire people tonight. It's not the player who goes out there and says, I did my job. The play was drawn up on the board. I did my job. That was it. What inspires you is the person who goes beyond, who goes further, who continually tries to get better. And there is not a single person who ever achieved greatness who was not a person who had that attitude. Every person who ever achieved greatness got there because they advanced toward it one step at a time, never being happy with where they were before, but deciding that there was a next level that they could get to tomorrow. What's the next level for you? What's the next level for the church, for this church? And then what's the next level for all of God's people? How much greater can the love be that we strive for? How much greater can the righteousness be that we fight for? How much greater can the spread of God's word be to those who need to hear it? That's our standard. This day and every day, to go one step further than where we were the day before. Amen.